Is that better? Last week they opened with Good Morning Vietnam. This week they opened with Good Morning Maryland.
Is that another movie that I've never heard of, Troy?
No, it's one we should make, though.
Okay.
Good Morning Maryland, starring Daniel Rasby, David Forsey. Oh, sorry, I gave you top billing. David Forsey, Daniel Rasby.
What?
I don't know how to give you equal billing.
That's all right.
Visually, you can put them both on the screen at the same time, but in audio, I don't know how to give you both the top billing.
Yeah, I see.
I know how to.
Top billing just means who's getting paid more, right?
David Rasby, Daniel Forsey. Is that
You're paying David. You're paying David three times as much as you pay me to be here. Because three times zero is zero.
Well, I got to tell you, I hate to break it to you, but I'm being paid a billion times more than both of you put together. Just for the record. Anyway, this is the Faith Debate. Off to another rip-roaring start.
That is a good segue. We should mention, you know, how grateful we are and, you know, to God, but and more down to earth, specifically to the station for giving us this time on the air, at no expense for so many years, because they really have seen the value in biblical teaching, or at least they see that there is enough demand from the listeners that justifies this. So if you're listening to the show and you have been blessed by it, please write or call to the radio station so that they can keep us on the air. Not that I'm expecting not to be on the air, but it's always good to have additional people and reasons for them, so that if ever somebody were to call and complain and try to cancel us, then they have some evidence in our file that people like us.
And if you've ever been cursed by the show, keep it to yourself.
Yes.
Anyway, so that's.
I think the people that would complain are not up this early on Sunday morning.
Probably not so much. they were busy with activities into the wee hours of Saturday night into Sunday morning. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. The one laughing at you, but you're not listening to hear him, is David Forsey. The other person who was telling you to continue to show your support for the show, and we do appreciate it, that was Daniel Rasby. I'm Troy Skinner, and this is The Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. Find us online at WFMD.com and householdoffaithinchrist.com. That's the name of the church that I pastor. So we've been talking about war. Ooh, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. You remember that song?
That's one position, yeah.
Remember that song?
No.
You guys haven't heard
it. Have you heard it before?
No, I haven't.
Wow. I haven't. You haven't heard that song?
Oh, I have.
Okay,
sure. I listened to classical music.
You didn't know Good Morning Vietnam. I was nervous, man. My cultural references.
Do you watch any movies, Daniel?
I like Star Trek.
Not the new Star Trek, though, because they've gone completely woke. The Star Trek Discovery, have you seen that one? It's a streaming-only thing.
It's got some really...
Have you seen that?
Really,
they should just call it, and I mean this, like, I don't mean this for shock value. I mean it using the vernacular of the day of the left. They should call it Queers in Space. Because the entire queer spectrum, the entire LGBTQIA+ thing, all of the... It's like... equal opportunity for everything to come at you and be offensive to your sensibilities if you're a biblical Christian.
Yeah.
So that's just because it's a lot of non-humans, right? Aliens.
Yeah, but there's same-sex relationships. And,
actually, in humans, too.
And transgenderism and trans-speciesism. And, like, it's like, off the charts. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
So I just saved you some time. You don't have to watch it.
I always identified as a Klingon.
The original series and the Next Generation series, I think, hold up over time. The other series, you know, we'll see. Anyway, so we're talking about what we're going to transition to talk about what we were hoping to talk about, which we've been talking about the last couple of shows, having to do with war and that sort of thing. I do want to take a second here to throw in personal reactions. So there was a war taking place in the middle of last century, or near the middle of the last century, centered mostly in Europe, although there's the Pacific battle as well. But most of us in this country, for some reason, focus on the Nazis and Hitler and all of that. And again, I'm going to say what Daniel said. Okay, fine. I'm not going to get every precise detail said in the way that you want me to say it, because I might not agree with your understanding. It's not as simple as, you know, Germany invades Poland and, you know, and the English were completely innocent bystanders, but they had to do something. I understand it's more complicated than that. But for ease of conversation, Germany invades Poland. The English and the rest of Europe have to do something. They get involved, and they try to rein this in, and Chamberlain is an abject failure, and there's an argument against pacifism, by the way. And I think some would disagree with me, I'm sure.
At least appeasement. But I'm not sure what the difference really is, to be honest.
Yeah, practically speaking, yeah. And then Churchill comes in and takes care of business. But it took a while, right? I mean, it took a long, long time. And so number of people, including Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who's one of the most famous theologians of the last century, in my opinion, one of the more overrated theologians of the last century. Not that he's completely overrated. Don't misunderstand me. He's brilliant. He's eminently quotable. There's a lot of good stuff there, but there's a lot of troublesome baggage in there, too. And we don't need to get bogged down in all of that unless one of you wants to take the bait. But
I think a lot of his practical theology is good.
Mostly what I want to talk about is Dietrich got involved with some guys that tried to take Hitler out. They tried to assassinate him.
Yeah.
And I was reminded of that truth with, I mean, ever since 2015, we've been hearing stuff about Donald Trump being Hitler. Right? He's a new incarnation of Hitler. He's America's Hitler. We've got to stop Hitler at all things. Who wants Hitler as the president of the United States?
I'm pretty sure people were, I'm pretty sure some people compared Nixon to Hitler back in the day. It's just a
trope at this point, right?
It's a way to demonize your political enemy.
And it's unfortunate because especially in American politics, it seems like everything is Hitler, everything's a Nazi or a fascist, because those are the most extreme examples most people can think of, having not as much education on history as they should, potentially, in order to draw other examples. But those are the first two examples anybody can think of as bad. Well, right. You're Hitler, so you're bad. And it's like racist. You're racist, which doesn't really have any meaning these days because it's used so much. So I would say even Hitler has no real meaning.
Everyone's
these days.
Hitler, no one's Hitler.
Exactly. Exactly. But you're right. I mean, many people, especially if they've been hearing, oh, he's Hitler, and then they look up, oh, Hitler killed 16 million people. I don't want that. So now we got to stop this, right? And there's this whole, there's so many time travel stories about let's go back in time and kill Hitler. If you had the chance, you would kill him. But could you actually kill him when he was a baby and he hadn't done any of these things yet? You know, and then you get the whole, you know, what's right and wrong from a Western perspective. But that's what you're getting at is it ever justified to assassinate anybody for any purpose?
And I was reminded of it.
And to be clear, because we're on the air here, I do not advocate that.
Well, that's going to be the question. That's actually the question. Do we advocate that?
We're not advocating.
He's on the record now.
Not advocating any specific assassinations against any person that is now living. We are talking about whether specific things in the past could have been justified.
But this question made it into the mix of this conversation because I was reminded of these realities this past summer, in the summer of, and as this airs, there hasn't been anything new. As we're recording, but something maybe new has happened by the time this airs. I don't know.
It may have been a successful attempt by the time it airs.
Yeah, let's hope not.
God forbid, for sure.
As we're recording this, I was reminded this past summer, in the summer of 2024, there were at least two and maybe a third that never quite got off the ground attempt on Donald Trump's life. And I couldn't help but think, you know, I disagree that Donald Trump's Hitler. He's not Hitler. I'm not a huge fan across the board with Donald Trump, but whatever you think of the man, he is not Hitler, okay? I mean, he doesn't even have a mustache, for crying out loud, okay? So, but there are people who are convinced.
Anyway, Hitler was famous for liking white people, but then Trump's orange, not white, so that's a problem. You know,
John Wilkes Booth thought he'd be a hero for taking out Lincoln, right?
Boy, because, he was surprised not to be.
Right? So these people, they get it in their head that if I take this guy out, I'm doing the righteous thing. This is a good thing for me to do. So now pivoting back to
that's
the actual Hitler, was Bonhoeffer and his buddies, was he right?
Well, here's, I guess, what's a more basic question, and you're gonna love my example of this one, but is an assassination ever a justifiable method of waging war? And we have a good example of that in the Bible. In fact, you're going to like, actually, maybe you like this because it's not a specific command by God, do it this way. But Ehud was a very fat man. Remember this passage?
Mm-hmm.
The guy's name who was, Ehud was, no, Ehud was the assassin, right?
And it's actually one of the funnier stories in the Bible.
Yes,
if you understand that there can be humor in the Bible, there's humor there.
It's kind of morbid, but it's morbidly funny, I guess, in a way. But yeah, so there was this.
It's locker room humor. Right?
So this guy goes to rescue the Jews from the oppression of this wicked king. Is it Moabite king, I think, at the time, or Midianite king?
I think so.
I'm going to trust you guys on that, I remember.
It's in Judges, and one of the characters' names was Ehud. So, but the point was, the king was really fat, and the guy went in and...
How fat was he?
Yeah, he went in under... deception and said, I came with a present for the king, and they sent all the guards out for some reason and said, here's the good present. The present was a knife that he stabbed him with, right, and killed the king. And while it wasn't explicitly commanded by God for him to do it in that way, that's recorded anyway. God may have spoken to the guy, the assassin, the judge of Israel. But there's no record the Bible says, go do it this way. But it does record he did, and it records him as in generally a favorable light.
Does he take it, you know, unto his own initiative to do that, or is he, you know?
There's nothing about God telling him to do it.
But it wasn't necessarily a military operation by the official government.
Well, it was.
He was one of the oppressed people.
Yeah, that's true.
He was a judge of Israel.
He was. So, in the sense that, right, he was a leader of people. He was, and also, we're told that God raised up judges. So, he was, and he's one of those named that God raised up as a judge. So,
so it was part of it. The reason I'm asking that question is part of his official capacity to do those sorts of things, right?
I mean, as much as it's the official capacity of like a prophet to speak the word of God, right?
Right.
God, you know, if we want to use some mushy language for assassinations, you know, God put it on his heart to go and assassinate this king, and then to go round up a bunch of Israelites to throw the oppressors out of the country.
So it says, the children cried unto the Lord raised them up a deliverer. So the Lord raised him up as a deliverer.
Right.
And by him, the children of Israel sent a present unto Egon, the king of Moab. So it was a group of Israelites who had joined in this plot together. So he wasn't acting alone. And I think that is...
And he was acting in the role of a deliverer that was raised up, and he was, like, sanctioned. It was a sanctioned activity. That's the question I'm asking. John Wilkes Booth wasn't sanctioned by anybody, right?
Sure.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer, I don't think, was sanctioned by anybody.
Well,
no, but he wasn't acting alone either.
Yeah, there's a group of them.
So that is a difference, right? So I think that's a key difference. There were a number of people involved with Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
So if I can convince a bunch of yahoos that I should go kill somebody, it's then okay?
No. But that is a good metric. If you're the only one that thinks this, then
yeah. Well, you know. I think it's the beginnings of a helpful metric. I think it's got to be more than that. I think I used this line, was it two shows ago, about, you know, we got to identify the lanes and stay in them. Yeah, Dietrich Bonhoeffer was not a military officer. He wasn't representing any particular military operation. He wasn't raised up by anybody.
He wasn't ordained by any...
He and his buddies...
Particular military force.
Was he? is there some secret aspect to his cloak and dagger activities that I don't know about? As far as I know, it was just a group of people who realized Hitler's got to go. And maybe we've got the means to do it. It wasn't like it was sanctioned by anyone.
Well, he was very involved.
Who was the authority there?
He was very involved as a spy, and so against Germany.
Was he commissioned? Maybe he was. I don't know. I'm asking honestly.
Well, not by Hitler, obviously.
Well, by the Allies.
Yeah, did Churchill send him, or did the Americans send him, or something?
No, but who needs to send him if it's the right thing to do?
Well, see, this gets into a question that we had probably over a year ago now, and it was just an aside, and I said,
about
abortion. Like, they're slaughtering, brutally slaughtering children in abortion mills all across the country. So should the three of us go barge in and take out all the doctors and nurses to save those babies' lives? Like, we don't have the authority to do that. It would be the right thing to do, quote-unquote, but we don't have the authority. It's not our lane. It's not sanctioned.
That gets back to what we said, a year ago as well, or 2 years ago, I think it was by now, where if you replace abortion clinic with anything else, then suddenly it feels all of a sudden a lot more reasonable, right? If you walk down the street and see somebody stabbing someone, you could feel obligated to, and certainly justified if you did, go and stop them or kill the guy who was stabbing somebody or shooting somebody that was of any age outside the womb. So what makes the difference now that they're inside the room, other than it's legally sanctioned by the government to kill a baby when they're inside the womb? And so then you're not only going, you're not only doing something that could be morally right, but it's also illegal under your own government. So now you have the question, you must obey God rather than men. So obviously, well, God commands you do, but does God always command you to go save every single person from harm? Those were interesting questions.
Are you Batman?
I don't think we really actually resolved those questions a couple years ago, and you know they're still kind of what we're talking about here. They're dangerous questions. You know, I think that there, if there's an immense, intense, an immense evil being committed, that is that's you know a problem. But there is a passage, and it just occurs to me, we didn't really bring this up a couple years ago. I think this might be a good example. There's a passage, a prophetic passage, which I would say is referring to a future end time, but regardless of when it's referring to, it's in Ezekiel, and it talks about, go mark all the men who are weeping and mourning for the evil that's being done in Israel, right? And then those people will be spared when Israel is destroyed or whatever. And there's a similar passage in Revelation talking about once we see all the men of God on their foreheads, then the locusts will not touch them, right? They come out of the abyss. But the aside from the main point of that passage, whatever it is, presumably these were people who their hearts were aching and they were actually crying and weeping and in anguish over the evil that was being done. They weren't necessarily personally stopping all this evil from being done. They hadn't taken it upon themselves to go kill all the Baal worshippers and whatever else. But they were definitely cut to the heart about it. So it may not always be incumbent on a believer to go immediately stop all sins that you see occurring throughout the country.
I personally would even take it further, because you know the power of the sword is given to the state. You know, the classic Romans argument. If we're not sanctioned, we're not ambassadors representing the state, you know, we're not the instrument the state's going to use to take care of things like, you know, the police officers or the military or what have you. Taking the laws into our own hands is anarchy. It's mob rule. It's like there's got to be some sort of a regimen of spheres of sovereignty and control of
this. So the A-team is not justified in what they do in the TV show?
Oh, so you haven't seen Good Morning Vietnam, but you have seen the A-Team.
Well, the A-Team was funny.
You are highly cultured, my friend.
So here's something that I think is interesting about the Dietrich Bonhoeffer situation is there was already many nations trying to stop Hitler, right? They were in the middle of a war. And so I think that's a different situation there.
In a peacetime where you...
Where you become vigilante, right?
Right.
Just for lack of a better term, right? So I think in that sense, Dietrich Bonhoeffer wasn't vigilante. He was part of a large plot, including higher up officials within Hitler's administration, in order to try and assassinate Hitler. So, and it was a time of war, right? So, you know, I think that changes the situation drastically, actually.
What about something that's not quite as dramatic as that? It's the same principles at play, but it's not about a war, although there's a culture war, and there's a spiritual war.
Right. But in a culture war, we use words, and we use the legal system, we don't use guns.
Does the name Michael Cassidy mean anything to either one of you off the top of your head?
No.
The satanic display in the State House of Iowa, does that mean anything to you?
Yes.
So in Christmas time, 2023...
Yeah.
Michael Cassidy took it upon himself to, I think he used a sword or something, and like...
No.
He took the head off of the satanic display somehow.
He pulled it off because it was...
He pulled it off?
It was just like
okay.
Sitting...
Whatever it was. He beheaded it.
It was a sloppy display.
He knocked the head off. And he's still in the news. Well, I don't know if he is as this airs, but as we're recording this, he's still in the news. He faced charged with a hate crime. Because it was some sort of religious attack on Satanism, I guess. I don't know.
He
got off on that. Technically, he got slaps on the wrist, but he didn't face the full brunt of what he could have faced. And I say praise God for that, because that's ridiculous. However, I'm not so sure he was right to do what he did. Now, I don't agree with what persecution he's been getting since. Like, he's apparently is an airplane fighter pilot trainer or something for the Navy. He trains reservemen or something. Okay. And the Navy's now coming after him, saying that he's a danger and they're going to decommission him. And I mean, I don't know But so he's still in the news for those reasons. But he wasn't part of some vast group of people.
Right? Yeah, he acted alone.
He wasn't representing, you know, some
and
sort of...
He also didn't kill anybody. He wasn't assassinating anybody.
But is it... Was he right to do that? I'm not so sure.
I don't think he was wrong to do it.
I would have a hard time convicting him if I was on the jury.
I mean, what he did was less destructive than, like, spray paint. Than like, you know, like on a wall.
And there is no place, and there should be no place, on public property or anywhere in the country for a satanic temple.
I agree with that.
It is not protected. It should not be protected under the First Amendment.
I actually would agree with that. Yeah, Satanism doesn't need to be protected. So I agree with that.
And so, but the proper forum for that, as you would say, would be to file a lawsuit.
Were there no other avenues available to him at all?
He could have potentially filed a lawsuit against the city. It probably would have gotten thrown out.
I mean, among conservatives who pay attention to these sorts of things, I know I'm in a distinct minority, right? I'm making enemies. People who might have liked me before now don't like me. Oh, you're just a mealy-mouthed, girly man. You don't think he should have done that. I'm just trying to figure out what
Jesus went, the righteous thing to do. Jesus went and overturned tables in the temple. Yes, he's God, but he was not acting only as God in that circumstance.
The Iowa State House isn't the temple of God.
No,
it sounded like Nancy Pelosi all of a sudden.
But they were defiling, the temple, and in this case, this satanic statue was defiling the public grounds. It defiles everywhere it exists.
Yeah, but Jesus goes into the temple, and it's his Father's house. He owns it.
This guy wasn't even
an Iowan, I don't think.
I think
he drove in from out of state. Wasn't even his state house.
I think you almost use a freedom of speech argument, right? Like, if you have the freedom to set this thing up, like, in a public space, well, then I have the freedom to come and take it down.
So do those knuckleheads in Europe have the right to throw pea soup at paintings on the museums? Right? It's a funny idea, but...
No, because it's not necessarily, like it might be displayed for the public to view, but... It's not a religious display.
We as Christians...
That old art is not making any particular statement. The only reason why they do it is because it will get them lots of attention.
I would not use the free speech argument either, because if you put up a depiction of the nativity scene, whatever, can some, you know, Buddhist go take that down? No, I don't think they can.
If it's in a state house?
Well, the things that are displayed in the state house are permitted by the state, right? So somebody applied for it and was approved based by duly elected officials
to put this display
up there, yeah.
Really?
Because they believed that under the First Amendment they had no right to deny anybody for any display, so they approve all displays.
Oh, so Troy, do you think you should have gone to get approval for a display and set up a purely Christian display next to the satanic display?
That would have been an avenue.
And then you might have come back the next day and the head might have fallen off on its own, just like when the Ark of God was next to Dagon.
I will say, if he feels like the strength of his conviction was, I need to do this, and if they throw the book at me, so what? Then okay.
Well, it's like the people that get arrested for praying outside abortion clinics, and it was in the news also last week. Some 83-year-old woman was facing all this jail time for being blocking the hallway. She didn't kill anybody. She didn't stop anything. She just stood in the hallway, which now they're trying to throw the book at her.
And we have less than a minute, but and this might spawn conversation. So I wonder if I should mention it. But we as Christians, we're Christians, a part of the body. Do we have the right to go to all these, you know, leftist Lulu, unbiblical churches throughout Frederick that are waving the pride flags
and tear them down?
And tear them down.
I think that's an option, but you need to understand what you're getting yourself into.
Gotcha. So we might be righteous in doing it, but then if we have to pay the civil penalty for
such
things.
I don't know that you could necessarily say, like, it's righteous. It's a way to communicate something, right?
That's true.
And it's a way to communicate maybe the truth. Okay. So, you know, like.
All right.
But it may be the wrong way.
All right. This was a good conversation. I liked it. We might shift gears a little bit next week. We'll see. We might talk about the weather. Right? Let's complain about traffic and the weather. That's always good things. No. It'll be more sophisticated than that, I promise you. I'm Troy Skinner. The one laughing at my lame joke was, and I appreciate that, by the way, is Daniel Rasby and David Forsey also. We're all pastors in the area. You can find us online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. Well, you can connect with me and I can connect with them. Or you can, of course, go to WFMD.com. Till next week, 167 and a half hours from now, God bless.